Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of May 1st, 2018. There are 6 working days left in the legislative session.
6 days left.
And the stage has been set to make these final 2 weeks a bit chaotic. House Democrats launched a revolt last week over budget spending. Senate Republicans gave a controversial abortion bill priority debate status that Democrats plan to filibuster, and a potential rate reduction for SC&G customers could be coming if lawmakers reach a compromise. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all 4 sections while you meal prep for the week. Come on, Darren, Lunchables do not count. Or arguing over the pronunciation of palmetto or palmetto. Who cares? Just give me some pecans. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number 1, the Post and Courier reports that top executives of Scana Corporation received pay cuts last year following the collapse of the VC Summer nuclear project. But C-suite executives still took home salaries and stock totaling $11.8 million, the company said. Former chief executive Kevin Marsh got $5.2 million worth of that, though he walked away from millions in unclaimed stock when he quit at the end of 2017. The former CEO made 46 times more than the typical Scana employee, who earned a median salary last year of $91,500. Not too shabby. Number 2, the Post and Courier reports that South Carolina lawmakers sent a bill to Governor Henry McMaster last week, creating a new state agency that they say will save lives and provide one stop for complaints. Now more than 230 employees in 4 existing state programs would transfer to the new Department of Children's Advocacy. The advocacy agency would investigate any time a child dies or is seriously injured while receiving state services or in state custody. In 2016, the agency settled a federal lawsuit accusing it of endangering the nearly 3,400 children in its care. Director Susan Alford, who took the helm in 2015, called the settlement the next big step in ongoing reforms, which included hiring caseworkers and creating regional call centers for reporting abuse. Number 3, following up on our lead from last week, the state newspaper reports 14 former South Carolina Department of Corrections employees have been indicted by a federal grand jury on charges of taking bribes to smuggle contraband, such as cell phones and drugs, into state prisons. Officials have said illegal cell phones played a major role in spreading the deadly prison riot at Lee Correctional Institution near Bishopville on April 15th. 7 inmates died in that riot, the nation's highest prison death toll in nearly 25 years. However, the indictments announced Wednesday are not the result of a new investigation. These federal charges are being brought against former prison employees who have already been tried on state charges or face pending state cases involving contraband from 2015 through 2017. And number 4 is a personal indulgence, my dear leaders, so bear with me. But an unscientific poll conducted on Twitter by Post and Courier editor Mitch Pugh found that 92% of respondents say it's more annoying to listen to politicians talk than journalists. Now, this playful poll was done in response to an equally jovial post from a lawmaker who will remain nameless, Mike Akaski, because he wants to be on this show. But for now, we're just having journalists on the show talking about the big stories facing South Carolinians. So leave the journalism to the journalists, and I'll leave the politicking to the politicians. Okay, thanks, love you mean it, bye. But joking aside, we love any and all feedback, so definitely holler at us on Twitter and Instagram. Why don't you slide into our DMs, why don't you? At SCLEDEPOD, that's SC Lead Pod. But we didn't get one picture of yellow jessamine. What's up with that? And just like that, fake news buried the lead once again. Lawmakers have been back and forth from their districts to Columbia since January, and it's all coming down to these last 2 weeks of the session. And we've been there right alongside them. I'm joined with Andy Shane, the Post and Courier's Columbia Bureau Chief, and the Russ McKinney of South Carolina Public Radio. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
The current state of play in the state house appears to be controlled chaos, simply put. House Democrats erupted last Thursday as Republicans attempted to push through an amendment to the budget that would, among other things, send $54 million to the state law enforcement division for a much-needed crime lab and boost spending for schools and prison safety. Utility reform bills are moving through the committee process in the Senate this week and could be on the floor shortly. But they and other bills could be hampered by a bill that would outlaw dismemberment abortions, which is currently in the top debate spot in the Senate. Now remember, bills that haven't been approved by both chambers and sent to the governor for his approval will be dead at 5 p.m. on May 10th, which is sine die. Also, there are 6 days left.
6 days left.
So we're going to start with something that's not very sexy, and that's the budget amendment. While it's $8.2 billion, so that's kind of sexy, it's not the coolest thing to talk about. But we do have Andy Shane here to kind of get some insight about what we saw last week with the Democrats filibustering the budget and what the big moments of contention were. This amendment to the budget highlighted some more spending that they want to see done in the budget, but it seemed like it caught Democrats off guard, caught a lot of people off guard. So, Andy, what did we see happen out there, and where are we going from this?
Well, I mean, you know, it's always going to be chaos, and this year, of course, has been a theme throughout it. It's been the nuclear mess sort of took up all the oxygen, in the first months mm-hmm. of the session. So now we're starting to play catch up with other issues. As you mentioned, the dismemberment abortion bill has gotten priority status in the Senate. So does that mean is anything else really going to get through? Because this is an issue that is very emotional, very important to several senators, while there are a number of other senators who'd rather see other issues taken up. It's not that they aren't they are for dismemberment yeah. abortion, but it's just they see other priorities needing to take shape before the session ends. In the House with the budget, it's sort of an annual rite of passage where the Democrats at some point have to sit here and say, wait a minute, there are some things here we disagree with. They're just about to go into conference committee, which is the main negotiating committee where they try to hash out the Senate and the House versions of the budget. And so you're sort of a last hurrah to say, you know, this is where we think you should put your priorities. And that's what we saw late last week, as well as the fact that, of course, the amendment got dropped on them fairly quickly. It was 38 pages, and then they were asked to vote on it. And they were like, just can you give us some time to read these things?
Mm-hmm. Russ, you were also out there watching this, too. Is this normal for us to experience this kind of chaos at this time of the year in the session?
I think so. I think what Andy said, I think it's really, really not all that atypical. I do think the dismemberment abortion bill may bring a dynamic to these last 2 weeks that we really haven't encountered recently. Senator Hutto is always there to try to change or to kill this type of bill, and he's again served notice that he plans to do that. And I think this time, though, he may really have to deliver on the promise. The bill has passed the House. It's Senator Massey called it the Republican leader in the Senate called it a very important bill. So I think it's something that's going to really, really affect these last 2 weeks. And kind of, as Andy mentioned, these issues tend to conflate in the last 2 weeks of a session. Senator Hutto, by the way, if we will recall, was the main backer of slowing down the nuclear bills mm-hmm. to let the PSC process run its course. So while I don't think that's his motivation at all to oppose this bill, mm-hmm. That's something that may have a negative effect on those nuclear bills.
Some of a byproduct there. And Andy, you just mentioned the conference committee. I want to stay with the budget just for another second. But sure. What do we see happen? What is the point of the conference committee and the budget? And do you think, based on where we are right now, I mean, are these guys going to be meeting after May 10th, after sine die, in your opinion?
Yeah, very much so. This is we call it the overtime. It happens every year after sine die. Sine die is when the session is supposed to end, which is May mm-hmm. 10th this year. So usually they pass an amendment called the sine die amendment where they say we're going to allow to meet, and they'll agree to meet usually 2 weeks afterwards to discuss the budget and obviously trying to negotiate a budget, as well as any other bills that are in conference committee. So mm-hmm. if a bill does pass both the House and the Senate, but it has different versions and they've agreed to a conference committee and they've appointed people to those conference committees, then those usually also go into the overtime session and can have a chance for passage.
Russ, you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just looking at the sine die resolution, which mm-hmm. is still in the Senate Judiciary Committee. The nuclear bills are included as something that can be taken up. So they were anticipating January, February, that those issues may have to join that sine die list.
And for us kind of following along that, when we do look at the nuclear bills, what did we see last week? I mean, that was also some drama in the House when we saw what was going on with the SCNG bill, lowering the rates incorporated into that S-954 bill. What was the difference between like the House version and the Senate version when we're talking about utility rates that SCNG customers would be paying? And that bill is now in conference committee, too.
Well, the House, to me, has been rather adamant about the issue from day one. They want no charge. They do not like the fact that SCNG customers are paying anything for the failed project. Mm-hmm. In the Senate, on the other hand, especially Senator Rankin and Senator Massey and others have maintained, look, if you do away with the charge totally, if you go to zero, you're really putting yourself in treacherous legal ground. So they cut that 18% monthly charge down 13% to 5%. So you have the House advocating 0%. The Senate's at 5%. Normally in a conference committee, you know, you would look to go somewhere, end up between there. Mm-hmm. On this issue,
And actually, they have to go in either or. I mean, You have to go with one version or the other. I mean, unless they go with free conference, not to add everything, but it takes the 2/3 votes in the House and the Senate to sit here and say, let us go ahead and try to split the difference there. But, you know, really, it's a game of chicken. I mean, you know, if we're going to have a situation where we're going to get any rate cuts whatsoever for folks, even if they're temporary, this is where it's going to come. And if they can't agree between, as you say, the 0% or the 5%, there may be nothing and we continue to pay.
And the governor also has a stance on this, too, Andy. Where does he come down on this and how does that affect this whole debate, too?
The governor is agreeing with the House. Cut it all. And he says he will veto anything that doesn't cut at all. There was some talk last week of the House agreeing with the Senate version and just cutting down to 5% temporarily. But there was some concern whether or not there was enough votes in the Senate to override a veto. But at the same time, the House came back and just said, nah. We just think we're sticking to our guns. The interesting part about this is that the House, all 124 seats are up for election this year. Senate is not. Mm-hmm. I think that's playing a little bit of a factor in the back of minds that you want to say, at least I fought. And in this case, you can blame it on the Senate if it mm-hmm. doesn't come through.
And that's interesting to point out because we have heard throughout the session House lawmakers really railing against the Senate. That's nothing new, but especially on these bills because they did pass several big ones out of the House so quickly because they were working overtime in the out of session. And then we saw those bills kind of get stuck in the Senate for the most part. Now, they will be moving this week. And last week, we did hear from Senator Tom Davis, who's a Republican from Beaufort. He was just kind of berating his fellow colleagues, certain ones. He wasn't naming names because they don't name names, but he was really kind of going after them for not moving these bills along. I want to play a quick clip of what he was saying from the Senate floor. This is Senator Tom Davis.
We've taken no action to reform the PSC. We've taken no action for there to be an effective ratepayer advocate by reforming the Office of Regulatory Staff. We've taken no action to preserve those assets out in Fairfield County. We've taken no action to go ahead and open up the energy markets to independent power providers who can come in and provide power more cheaply than the utilities do. We've taken no action in regard to giving consumers choice in regard to renewable energy options. And not only haven't we taken action in regard to all those items I've just left, we haven't even gotten a subcommittee hearing on any of those matters.
But after those remarks, the Senate subcommittee did meet. Russ, we did see that Senate Judiciary Chairman Luke Rankin's subcommittee dealing with these utility reform bills did meet, did move these bills out to the full committee. And that we're going to be seeing that activity happen on Tuesday in the full committee meeting. That's where all the lawmakers, half the Senate is actually in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So anything we should be looking for in that Senate Judiciary Committee meeting on Tuesday, Russ?
Well, the Judiciary Committee has been, let's say, more than deliberate in dealing with these bills this year. So I really don't know. I can't get a feel for exactly how they're going to go from here. Reference Senator Massey again, the Senate Majority Leader. He indicated to us late last week that he thought they would move, but he also referenced sometimes it takes a miracle in May to see these things come about. There are also their rules, advantages that Senator Massey, as also chairman of the Rules Committee, has at his disposal to move bills around in this final 6 days of the session. So I think there are several different routes that could conceivably the bills could go. Senator Massey, while we're talking about him, also mentioned to us last week, which I thought was interesting, Andy, he said he thinks that the extending the deadline for the PSC is probably more, that's in the same bill, is probably more important than the rate aspect of it.
I mean, it's important because there's a feeling that SCANA and wants a decision faster because it has its $14 billion sale to Dominion. Dominion from Virginia has made this offer. They want to get things done quickly so that they can move ahead with the sale, get all the regulatory approvals so that they can get the shareholder approvals and so forth. Basically, the PSC needs more time to assess.
Public SCANA, Service Commission.
Sorry, the Public Service Commission. These are the utility regulators in the state. Want more time to sit here and try to figure out what role did SCANA play in the VC Summer nuclear fiasco? What kind of responsibility did it have? And obviously make that part of the decision, I think, in whether or not they would allow the sale to go ahead with Dominion. So it's important, I think, because it also sits here and says, let's slow things down a little bit. Things have been moving fairly quickly with all of this, and the Senate being deliberate wants even the regulators to be deliberate. And to a certain degree, the House agrees with that. But what they want is to say, you know what, during this time, between now and the end of the year, let's at least suspend the payments. Let's at least tell the 700,000 South Carolina electric and gas customers, you don't have to pay for these reactors that will never produce a kilowatt of power. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's something that's important to them. It's more than just a symbol of just saving a few bucks. I think it's also a signal to the PSC, to the regulators, when they decide also what to do with the other thing that's important in this review that they're doing is deciding what to do with the rates moving forward. The PSC ultimately can make the decision about whether or not South Carolina Electric and Gas can continue to pay for the nuclear reactors to make the customers pay for those things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, it's sort of the whole ball of wax and coming up.
Well, and when we look at the bills that are in Senate Judiciary that could get out this week, dealing with repealing the Baseload Review Act and also creating a consumer advocate, this would be a position that would actually be on the side of customers who get stuck in these situations when, you know, utilities want to raise rates. They would have a consumer advocate on their side that would not also be working with utilities at the same time. So this would be a separate consumer advocate. But again, those bills are in the Senate Judiciary Committee this week. And even if they get out, though, things get a little complicated. Like we were talking about, the abortion bill would therefore be in front of it. So if you got these bills, these utility reform bills on the Senate floor, I mean, what happens then? I mean, does it kill them? I mean, what happens there, Russ? You were kind of talking about possibility.
I think, as we mentioned earlier, the fact that these bills are specifically mentioned in the sign and die resolution, something that we can deal with after the June 10th adjournment, mm-hmm. I think there's a good possibility of that, along with the budget, maybe looking at some late June or even July consideration.
And I think the BLRA, the Baseload Review Act, which is the law that allows mm-hmm. SC&G to charge its customers for the nuclear construction, it was sort of as a pay-as-you-go kind of situation. Of course, there's no more go. Is that I don't think that's going to get repealed. I just don't think there's the appetite in the Senate to do that at this point. And again, they're putting this in the hands of the regulators to decide moving forward. And again, I think what everybody would like to see is a signal from the House and the Senate to say, at least temporarily, we want to cut the rates. So, wink, we would think maybe you ought to make it permanent rather than us try to make it into law.
And just kind of to wrap up the show here, we're talking about where things are going right now. And what we are seeing in the Senate is that they did put this dismemberment abortion ban bill in place in special order status. And that's a rare procedure that's used roughly like 20 abortions out of maybe about 5,700 that were seen done in 2016. It's used after the first trimester when the health of the mother is in jeopardy. Like we said, rarely used. But this bill is kind of becoming a last-ditch effort for these Republicans who have been in the Senate, who have been really trying to get some sort of win, some sort of something they can take home to their base when it comes to this. They tried to get personhood moving. That was the bill that would say that life begins at the point of conception. That was really controversial in the Senate. It barely got out of the Judiciary Committee, and it's also stuck on the Senate floor. There were some movements earlier to try and defund Planned Parenthood and prevent some other moves in the budget. But, Andy, is this bill going to move? I mean, what can we expect to see here if they've been really trying to get everything to move on this, put everything on this one bill to try and get some action?
My hunch is it's going to go with like the other bills, not really very far. Mm-hmm. Again, with a limited amount of time, I see this bill being the one that runs out the clock. And, of course, might end up running out the clock on a number of other bills. Mm-hmm. But I think there's going to be enough objection to this, just like there was with the personhood bill, just to kind of keep it at bay. This has just, as I said, been an issue of a few senators who make some of these social issues, life issues, sort of their main goal. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that not anybody in the Senate doesn't do it. There's, I mean, it's not that there's a lot of disagreement about it. It's just a matter of that there are some people who are going to fight it very hard, and are there bigger issues that they need to tackle? And in the end, with 6 days left, it's pretty easy to run out the clock.
And Senator Grooms of Berkeley, Larry Grooms of Berkeley County, one of the primary advocates of this bill, was even quoted last weekend as saying, you know, in a way, we could overplay our hand on this and try to bring other abortion issues as be a part of this bill. So that could conceivably slow the bill down even more.
Yeah, he was talking about possibly having the votes to sit down the Democrats from filibustering, but then there was also some worry that the bill could be amended and it could include some provisions from the personhood bill, which would really, I mean, that bill actually has some issues with fellow Republicans. Even these pro-life Republicans have some issues with the personhood bill. So it wouldn't really, if that was amended, it would cause some issues there. But I think in its own form, it seems like there's enough support for the bill itself. So that's something we're going to have to see. And if it does change, and what, I mean, just kind of all the fun of the last 6 days of session that we've been talking about right here.
Yeah.
Are you watching for anything else right now, just like wrapping up? Anything we should be keeping on our radar?
You know, the one other issue I would say is plastic bags.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we talk about it as the plastic bags bill, but in a way it's really about local government rights. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you have these local governments that are trying to place bans on stores putting out plastic bags, especially along the coast, because, of course, it's an ecological issue along the coast. And there's a push in the House, I'm sorry, in the House and the Senate, to essentially make it so that the state can override any of these bans that you've seen, especially down in the Charleston area. So it'll be interesting to see if that can make it through, because again, that's a big issue for you know, the number one industry in South Carolina, tourism.
Yeah, and Russ and I were talking with Senator Shane Massey, the Senate Majority Leader, last week, and he was saying that, you know, it's not necessarily dead, just despite it being where it is right now. It's been contested in the Senate, but that doesn't mean it can't go anywhere. Some more things to watch, but it does get a bit blurry from here on out, so be sure to stick with Andy Shane and his team at the Post and Courier, as well as listening to South Carolina Public Radio with Russ McKinney. And also watch my daily video recaps on YouTube, Facebook, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. And follow these guys also on Twitter, because that's where all the magic happens for journalism these days. So Andy Shane, Post and Courier Bureau Chief here in Columbia, and Russ McKinney with South Carolina Public Radio. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been great to be here.
Time to hit the old dusty campaign trail right quick to bring you up to speed on some news regarding statewide political campaign activity. Campaign trail. Remember the April 17th lead about Republican fundraising in the gubernatorial race? Well, here's what all that money is about. We're going to tell you. It's called television advertising. You probably have seen it already on TVs, broadcast, cable, even on YouTube. And it's rolling out in several races with 6 weeks to go until the June 12th primaries. And we saw new TV and web ads from both Governor Henry McMaster last week and his top challenger, Mount Pleasant lawyer Catherine Templeton. McMaster's 30-second ad prominently features President Donald Trump praising McMaster, who was the first statewide elected official to endorse Trump's 2016 presidential bid. Templeton, the former state health agency director, also wrote out 30-second spots playing up her buzzsaw nickname for cutting through bureaucracy, her pro-life stance by deciding against her doctor's advice to have an abortion to save one of her children, and another ad about corruption in Colombia. Keep in mind, McMaster and Templeton had $2.9 and $2.5 million, respectively, on hand at the end of March. Now, it's also worth noting that upstate businessman John Warren launched his TV spots in early April, which focus on him introducing himself to voters, his service as a Marine, growing his own business, and his values. And Warren is willing to spend millions of his own dollars on the race. And outside groups are also pouring money into the gubernatorial race as well. Our friend Andy Shane at the Post and Courier reports that the group Citizens for a Working America has launched its second ad backing McMaster. Another outside group, American Future Fund, has been advertising on Templeton's behalf. Lieutenant Governor Kevin Bryant and former Lieutenant Governor Yancey McGill are also running in the June 12th primary. Three Democrats are running for their party's nomination as well. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Oh, what's that? Is that the sound of originality I hear? Did you know it's also the sound of the state bird, the Carolina wren? Well, now you do. Terrific. That's not what we're here to talk about specifically. This is more of a way of Gavin's gripes to come out instead of a did you know this week. Hashtag Gavin's gripes. Now, there are seven states.
Seven states.
That have the cardinal as the state bird. That's right. I'm looking at you, North Carolina and Virginia. Real original. Also, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia are also in the basic bird category, as we're going to call it, and have the cardinal as their state bird. Hashtag birds of a feather. Now, it's a gorgeous bird. I get it. It's striking. You won't be surprised to hear that I've often been compared to a cardinal, thanks to my impeccable plumage. But here's some bird stats flying your way. Birds, two wings, one beak, lots of feathers, and there are 914 species of birds in North America. More stats. 50 states, one America the beautiful, waves of grain, too many cardinals as state birds. Now, our beautiful state bird, the Carolina wren, is who we know and love. You know their bird song. Sounds like tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle. Now, sure, they're not as distinctive or as striking as the cardinal, but the small bird has a noticeable white stripes over the eyes. The back of its body is brownish red, and its tail is finely barred with black. So, you can put a bird on it, just not a cardinal, guys. Tea kettle, tea kettle, tea. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Watch my Statehouse video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook page, our YouTube page, and my Twitter account at Gavin Jackson. Read the Statehouse Daybook on SCETV.org, and listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and at scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new podcast for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts. You can also find us on the NPR One app. Follow us on Instagram at SCLEDEPOD, that's at SCLEDPOD, and you can see photos from the studio around the Statehouse and on assignment. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at SCLEDPOD. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to SCLEDE@SCETV.org. South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and special thanks to the Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio studios here in Columbia on April 30th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message number one. The Waldorf Astoria has delicious shrimp cocktail.
Shrimp cocktail.